No.
So we have nothing to say.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by White Oak Pastures. White Oak Pastures cattle are raised in a manner that has stood the test of time. It begins with southern sunshine, unpolluted country air, and fertile coastal soil. The cattle are allowed to roam the pastures and graze freely on native grasses all of their lives. White Oak Pastures all-natural grass-fed beef has been available in all of the Whole Foods stores in the mid-Atlantic states. We hope that you will support the program through your purchase of beef. White Oak Pastures beef, that is. For more information, go to whiteoakpastures.com. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring sustainability, local foods, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folks. Our conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking Nani Powers' adventures in Indian cooking and makes and does. If you're listening live to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, feel free to give us a call at 718-497-2128. Meeting a delightful food blogger is like the first bite of a homemade potato chip. You constantly go back to the bowl, or in the case of bloggers, back to their website. In the studio, we have Autumn Giles. She blogs at autumnmakesanddoes.com. Autumn, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you so much for having me, Nicole.
Make and done lately. You have this great little box on the side of your website. And it's crazy because two of the things I've tried. The rosewater marshmallows and the salted brown butter crispy treats. And then you were all the buzz on the Brooklyn Twitter scene about the basil simple syrup. I actually had some of that too.
Did you really? And you liked it?
I totally. So the basil simple syrup,
right?
We were at a canning event together and I think someone sweetened that with that. Tell me, is that your own recipe?
Well, I mean, I always, before I make something or come up with a recipe, I do research online and sort of get a guide. But that was something that I put together, and any type of simple syrup is very easy. Earlier in the summer, I made rosemary simple syrup, and but the basil simple syrup was really just a 1-to-1 ratio of water and sugar, and about a handful of basil, probably about a cup of washed basil leaves, and you just boil it for about 3 or 4 minutes, let it steep, and strain out the basil. And I've heard that lasts for about a month in the fridge, so it's a great way. I wrote about this on my blog, but it's a great way. You know, I am very thrifty always when I'm shopping, and so I look for like the biggest bunch of basil at the grain market for the cheapest price, but I come home with like a tree of basil, so then I have to think of things to do with it. And it's a great way. Simple syrup is a great way to use up herbs.
So what's up with all the Brooklyn foodie people having a bottle? Where's my bottle? How did everyone get a bottle of the basil simple syrup?
I definitely owe you a bottle of basil simple syrup. Kate, you and I first met at
She's been on Hot Grease before.
The food swap that Kate helps organize, and Kate got some because I got some of her fantastic blackberry vanilla jam, and then Emily got some because I got some of her peach chutney, and then we were talking about it on Twitter, and there was, you know, whenever
then I saw Meredith Mo, friend of the show. She chimed in. I'm like, okay, what's up with this? And then we have to talk about our little crispy crack bars. I'm going to give them a new name. Please. Oh my gosh. Smitten Kitchen's recipe. Mm-hmm. I think she's been on one of the shows here. I forget her
That's
full name.
Great. Yeah. Well, so Nicole, as you know, I'm a gluten-free blogger. I have celiac disease and so have to follow a gluten-free diet. And, I really like to make things that are gluten-free, but people have no idea that they're gluten-free, you know? And so
I had no idea about the crispy
exactly.
bars.
Exactly. So the only thing in the recipe was originally from Deb of Smitten Kitchen. And the only thing in that recipe that would have had gluten is the brand name Rice Krispie Treats, because they have malt flavoring from barley. So just by simply replacing those with a type of Rice Krispie Treat that doesn't have that, or type of Rice Krispie that doesn't have that malt flavoring, they were gluten-free, and they are a fantastic thing. Especially this summer, I am always baking in the winter and making things, but I've been trying to come up with like the sweet treats to make that don't require the oven, and they're fantastic.
So we have to talk about the sweet tooth thing. I have it really. Oh my gosh. When I saw on your website, you have a lot of dessert recipes.
I do.
I'm like, oh, this is why we bonded. Right? My new BFF. I absolutely love sweets. You also made some rose water marshmallows. And I just have to ask you the question, because you just talked about the gluten thing. Regular marshmallows have some kind of gluten in it, correct?
Well, with someone following a gluten-free diet, it really depends from brand to brand, if you know what a manufacturer might add in. The mainstream brand name Kraft marshmallows are gluten-free, but
Yeah. So I thought I, with all those whatever they have in there, that for sure would have. Okay.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about making you know, cooking for yourself and making your own, for example, marshmallows. It's something you could buy in the store, but making them yourself, you can, of course, you know exactly what's going into them, and you can control you know exactly what you put in them. And it was my first time making marshmallows, actually.
They are great.
It was really fun. And it's one of those things that is actually, you don't have to tell people, but it's pretty easy. But when you take it, you know, like when I was at the canning party with you, take it to the party, it's pretty impressive to people, even though it's quite easy to make.
So we have to talk canning party. Yeah. So Kate Payne, aka Hip Girls Guide to Homemaking, she's been on Hot Grease before, she did a Hot Five, she hosted a canning party, 10 other people came, and we made, oh my gosh, I forgot what we made. It's I haven't started eating any of it yet, and well, I haven't picked up my ketchup.
I also have to pick up my ketchup. We made ketchup, we made plum lemon jam, and that recipe is on Kate's blog with along with a lot of great tips about for beginning canners, which I know I'm a beginning canner, and I think
yeah, my mom cans, and I grew up watching her do it, but I realized that, I mean, I guess she does it the old school way, so some of the things that she's doing is,
right.
I mean, according to what we're doing is incorrect, but I'm not going to tell her that because she's probably going to tell me I've been canning all my life.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, but anyway.
We also made peach chutney and some pickled green beans, which are the thing that I know, I think we're supposed to wait a month or so before we open those to have the best flavor. No, I've been waiting. It's been hard, though. I don't know that I'll make it that
long.
Have
you tried? I mean, have you used any of the canning stuff yet?
I haven't yet. I think that the first thing I'll probably break into will be those pickled green beans.
Yeah,
those
I heard are my favorite. The host, or not the host, more so the main instructor, foodinjars.com, she was saying that she puts them on top of hot dogs, kind of like a sauerkraut type thing. I was like, oh, that's a great idea.
Right, instead of the pickle relish. I think that'd be great. And they're the right size, too.
Totally. Autumn, darling, we're going to take a quick break. Listeners, stay tuned. We'll be back with more with Autumn Makes and Does.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. Also, feel free to subscribe to any Heritage Radio Network podcast, particularly Hot Grease. Leave a comment when you go on iTunes. You can leave a comment about the show. Do it right there on iTunes. We are chatting with Autumn Giles, a Queens, New York resident and the person behind AutumnMakesAndDoes.com. Autumn, are you from New York? Are you from Queens originally?
I'm not from Queens. I'm actually from Montana, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a okay. So how long have you been in New York?
I have been in New York on and off for about 6 years. I went to college here, left after college, came back, went to grad school in Westchester, and then have lived in Queens for the past year.
Cool. So yeah. I have to ask, food in Queens.
Right.
What are some of your favorite spots? I know that some of the spots may not have a lot of gluten-free stuff.
Right.
But there's a Thai spot that I'm dying to try. I can't pronounce it. It's Sarah Fiana, something in Queens.
I've heard about that place, right, on Twitter. I think it's a favorite.
Yeah. Have you been there? No.
I have not. As you mentioned, you know, the first thing I usually get when I tell people that I'm from Queens, I live in Astoria, is, oh, the restaurants there are fantastic. And I do have to be careful because I follow a gluten-free diet very strictly, but even... you know, not maybe being able to fully take advantage of the restaurant scene in Astoria as some other people are. I find that what I eat has definitely been influenced by living in Queens. There's fantastic markets, you know, and a couple weeks ago there were figs in the market that were incredibly cheap.
Oh my God.
And also there's this thing that I sort of, I knew about it before moving to Queens, but my love for it was rekindled, and it's yogurt cheese called Lebany. I don't know if you've had it, and I might be pronouncing it wrong. So it's like almost the consistent, a little thicker than strained yogurt, and more tangy like sour cream. And so it's fantastic on something like figs. So just like have a fig, spread some on there, a little salt. It's fantastic.
Yeah, one of my favorite yogurt spots or yogurts that I buy here in Brooklyn is made in Queens. And all of a sudden, I'm having a brain fart. I can't even. It's Kesso, K-E-S-S-O. But they're based in Queens. They make the best strain yogurt. I have to shout out to Queens. Some of you guys are listening may know, Autumn, you may know, I'm on the benefit committee for the Vindy Awards. And one of the Vindy finalists, the King of Falafel, is in Queens.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, he's in Astoria. He's at 30th and Broadway. He has it's Freddie the Falafel King.
I've walked by him. I'll have to say hi next time.
So let's talk about the gluten-free thing.
Sure.
I always hear people, you've mentioned it several times. What does it really mean to have a gluten-free diet?
Sure. Well, I'm happy to talk about that, Nicole. And people go on gluten-free diets for many different reasons. I personally have an autoimmune disease called celiac disease, and so I am medically required to be on a 100% gluten-free diet. But gluten is the protein found in wheat, barley, and rye, and oats are sort of a tricky one. The conventional oats that you'd find in the store are not considered to be gluten-free, even though they don't naturally contain the gluten protein. It's likely that they're grown and processed near things that do contain gluten, so they're considered to be cross-contaminated. But there are great companies like Bob's Red Mill is one that does certified gluten-free
oats. I've seen his stuff before.
Yeah. So, basically what that means, it doesn't mean that you never eat bread. It just means that you have to figure out how to make gluten-free bread.
So this is a crazy question, but I have to ask. So
please.
What happens if you eat a bunch of foods that are full of gluten?
Sure. Well, I mean, people have different symptoms of celiac disease. And that's for me, I can talk about my experience. That's, one of the reasons why it can be so hard to diagnose. So there, and I can tell you there was a time, so it can cause upset stomach, and it can cause headaches, and it can cause depression. For me, just to be very specific, there was a time last winter I was out in a restaurant and was served gluten on accident. And I, you know, my stomach was maybe felt a little weird, but it was only because I knew what had happened that I was so in tune to what was happening with my body. But what happened after that was I think that my immune system got really weakened, and I had this monster weird cold that didn't go away for like 3 months. So, but the most common symptoms people talk about are like, you know, maybe feeling very lethargic, just not feeling well. It can be definitely a range of things for people when they eat gluten and they shouldn't.
I think of, I don't know, this is crazy, but I have to say this. Every time I hear the word or person, the poster child for gluten-free, I think about Elizabeth Hasselbeck from
right.
The View, the Republican
right.
crazed woman. Is right. there anybody else? I mean, we need a better spokesperson.
I know she is a celebrity who's gluten free. Well, now just recently, Chelsea Clinton. Maybe you heard she had her wedding, and I didn't know this before her wedding, but it came out in the process of the details of her wedding being publicized that she follows a gluten free and sounds like mostly vegan diet. So hopefully, I too would be happy if we had someone.
Girl,
besides
we need
Elizabeth
we need
Hasselbeck.
An extreme liberal. I'm joking. What I do love about your blog, and if you're listening, you guys definitely need to check it out, is you have absolutely no clue that all of your recipes are gluten free. Even when you look at your blog roll, there's only like one from the name that you say, "Oh, okay, this is gluten." But all of your favorites, or I guess your go to. Blogs on your site. Shout out, you put Heritage Radio Network
I sure
on that.
Did.
Okay. We like. None of them have the gluten-free name in them. What are some of your favorites, or highlight some of the blogs that are on your website?
Sure. Well, I'm someone who just in general loves food, and just happens to be that I also have to eat gluten-free. But one gluten, there is a fantastic network of gluten-free bloggers out there and people on Twitter. If you're new to the diet, you want, you know, some tips or support, they're definitely out there. And, you know, one gluten-free blog that I do consult a lot and a lot of people are aware of is Gluten-Free Girl. And she has just a lot of, you know, when you're like biscuits, really. The first time I made a successful gluten-free biscuit recipe, it was from her. And so I really go to her blog to sort of learn how to cook something gluten-free.
Didn't she have a lot of videos, or didn't she come out with a video last week, or is this the same person?
Yeah, she had a cookbook video out, a book trailer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, she's doing a book. Great.
Yeah.
So maybe she's very liberal and she can be the new Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Exactly.
So you have, let's see, I thought I saw a famous chef on here.
I mean, I have David Leibowitz on there, who's someone who I've, you know, he makes a lot of ice cream, which should be gluten-free, and Joy the Baker, as you mentioned, we both have a sweet tooth.
Oh, yes.
And you know, I've been gluten-free for about, let's see, 5 or 6 years maybe, and so I'm getting to the point where I feel comfortable going to websites like Joy the Baker, who is a fantastic baker, and looking at her recipes and working to adapt them to be gluten-free.
Oh, great. So you, at this point, you can go and you know exactly what to substitute and what to make gluten.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, it definitely, sometimes you'll get lucky on the first try and it'll be fantastic, but there are definitely, you know, the sunken cupcakes and then the disaster brownies that won't solidify, that sort of thing. But, you know, it does take a few tries sometimes. But once you get used to working with the different types of flour that are gluten-free, you learn about their different characteristics and qualities, and it becomes sort of a fun problem to solve in the kitchen.
Cool beans.
Yeah.
Autumn, it has been a delight. You have such a bubbly, very nice personality.
Thank you, Nicole.
And I am glad you stopped by Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you so much for having
me. And we have to have you back on, or we need to get in the kitchen. We need to do more recipe swapping.
We do.
I'm not opposed to gluten-free anything. I just love food.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us on Hot Grease.
Thank you.
Listeners, check out autumnmakesanddoes.com. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with the author of Ginger and Ganesh. Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. This program is being sponsored by White Oak Pastures. White Oak Pastures has all natural grass-fed beef. You can check them out at whiteoakpastures.com. Let me give a Southern girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Strong women, great food, and love equals beautiful magic. We're not talking about the new Julia Roberts movie, but Nanny Power tells this story in her latest book, Ginger and Ganesh. On the phone, we have Nanny Power. Nanny, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This is my pleasure.
Your journey began with an ad on Craigslist, which led to this great book. Tell us about the post that you initially posted.
Well, I really just had this hankering to learn Indian cooking, and I really wanted to learn it the proper way. I'd tried and tried to learn it from cookbooks, and it just wasn't coming out the way I thought it should. And I just felt like maybe if I came into people's houses and people would teach me hands-on, I might really learn how to do it. So I got this inspiration to put an ad on Craigslist. And I just thought, you know, maybe I'd be lucky to get one response, but I actually got probably 40 or 50 responses. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What were some of the main points? I don't have my book. I read the book like 2 months ago, and I didn't bring it. But what were the highlights of the ad? What exactly did you say in that Craigslist ad?
It was really simple. I said, please teach me Indian vegetarian cooking. I will bring ingredients and pay you $10 an hour for your trouble. I would like to know about your culture as well.
Aha. Uh-huh. And I remember.
Very simple.
and it's so funny because at the very beginning of the book, you tell the story of Padma. And I think she either called you or emailed you back.
Yes.
And her husband said no to the ad. How many of those did you get?
Well, weirdly enough, she's the only one, but maybe she's the only one who actually told me. Because a lot of people faded off here and there for whatever reason. But she just emailed me back, and she said, my husband doesn't want me to pursue this. And then she wrote, I thought this was interesting, there goes one of the lessons in Indian culture. And there was something so mysterious about that. I wanted to reply to her, but I just felt I'd be intruding. But I thought that was a very interesting sentence she added.
Yeah, and so you that brings up a great point when you say lessons in Indian culture. I'm very curious to hear your general thoughts about feminism and food, and particularly in the Indian culture.
Well, I do think that, you know, just like American women, Indian women are gaining more freedom. They're working. They're more educated than years back. But still, I think in their family lives, I think from my observations at least, they are still responsible for putting food on the table. Even if they have a full-time job, which is as demanding as their husband, the responsibility of the meals kind of falls on their shoulders, and they take it very seriously. At least the families that I was participating with, they were all vegetarian, and it's very hard to get nourishing, good vegetarian food outside of the home for them in restaurants. So it was a very big, serious responsibility, and it involved a lot of shopping and a lot of cooking and a lot of culture passed on. So it was it had a very big role, much more than here.
In your book, it's packed up with tons of very memorable stories and experiences, and you also have a few recipes. If you had to choose two or three experiences or recipes, which one would you tell our listeners about before they pick up the book to read?
I had a couple of really amazing experiences. Well, first of all, I fell in love during the writing of the book.
Exactly.
With a much younger man. That was very unexpected, and that kind of permeates the entire book, and I leave the book unfinished in that direction. It didn't get resolved. I'm, in fact, still seeing that person. So that was a very unexpected thing to happen when I went into people's houses. I met somebody's brother, and one thing led to another, and it became this extremely learning experience for me and him, not only just about culture, but just about the age difference and about love and many, many feelings. So that was something that happened in the book I hadn't expected. Another thing that happened was right in the beginning, I met a family, young family, in their early 20s, and I noticed on his car he had a license plate that said Miracle Boy, and I kind of asked her about that when I was cooking with her, like, why does he have that on his license plate? And she kind of just brushed it off. As I got to know them, I learned the full story, which was that he had actually lost his entire family in an earthquake in India and had come to this country as a survivor. And they finally, after some time, told me the story, and he had been caught in the rubble for 4 days. And I just thought that was an amazing, amazing thing that he'd gone through, and that he had put it on his license plate of his car. I thought was something that it obviously characterized his life.
And one of the recipes that's your go-to recipe that always reminds you of this experience and this journey that began with Craigslist. What is the maybe one wet recipe?
Well, the one recipe in here that I love and everybody seems to love, it's a tried and true favorite, but when you can make it yourself, it's amazing, is the Palak Paneer, the spinach with cheese. I think everybody loves that when they go to Indian restaurants out of the vegetarian choices. And when you can make it homemade, it tastes so much better. It's just, I've had a lot of people contact me and say that they made it and they're just absolutely freaking out because it tastes so good.
Well, I need to put that one on my list. I'm actually afraid to make Indian food at home, but you give me hope.
Well, if you try with my directions, you're going to be amazed at how good it is. It's just follow the directions that I write in the book, and it'll be delicious. You'll see, it'll be amazing because it's real spices and they're browned, and just got to put a little time into it, and you'll love it.
Nanny, please let our listeners who are listening, we have people in New York, we have people on the West Coast that listen to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Please remind them of the title of your book. And you actually have about 4 or 5 other books that you've authored as well.
That's right. Well, this book is called Ginger and Ganesh, Adventures in Indian Cooking, Culture, and Love. And it's from Counterpoint Press. And then I have 3 novels, Crawling at Night, which is going to be made into a movie at some point. It's been optioned, yeah. And that's about sushi. So if you're a sushi fan, that's a great book to pick up. And then I have 2 other books called The Good Remains and The Sea of Tears.
Nanny, thank you so much for inspiring me to get in the kitchen and make some Indian food and coming on Hot Grease.
Well,
the book is beautiful. It's a great book. And we look forward to keeping in touch with you.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Have a great week.
You too.
Listeners, thank you for tuning in live to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Or if you're listening via our archives or iTunes, thanks. Join me every Monday at 3:30 on Heritage Radio Network. Until then, always take the road less traveled.